Lisa was pretty sure that she was crazy. She wasn't sure what she had been expecting to hear when Dean finally called her again, but something about an injured ex-girlfriend and having to find a safe place to store her wasn't one of the first scenarios she had dreamed up. Dean had been making noises about being gone longer than expected and something about a drive to North Dakota and a panic room when Lisa had told him to bring the girl home. The instant that the words left her mouth, she was fairly certain that she was possessed. The only thing that reassured her that she wasn't was that Dean would know if she was. It was a cold comfort given the way that Dean had been acting ever since, well, ever since she'd seen him the second time in her life when he'd first met Ben. Still, Lisa liked to think of herself as a caring woman, and though she had never met this Bobby that Dean kept mentioning, she highly doubted that he was any better at helping people cope than Dean was. Given the kind of things she actually knew Dean did, let alone what her imagination came up with, she figured that the ex-girlfriend could use some real emotional support. When the rumble of Dean's engine announced that he was back from wherever the hell he had been, Ben ran out to meet him before Lisa could grab a hold of him and make him wait. Her son bounded back in a moment later with Dean's horse, dog, in tow, mumbling something about playing with him in the backyard because Dean said he could. It was getting dark out, but Lisa figured that she could bend her rules a little bit, given that she was fairly certain that she wasn't going to want Ben overhearing the conversations that were about to take place. She tried very hard not to gasp when Dean carried a tall blonde in. The poor girl looked horrible, but Dean looked more animated than he had since he'd come to live with her. He didn't look happy, he didn't look anywhere near good, but he looked like he had a purpose. She motioned for him to put the girl down on the living room sofa while she introduced herself to Bobby. It all went downhill from there. The first thing that Lisa found out was that the girl's name was Jessica. The second thing was that she had been Sam's girlfriend and not Dean's. That was the last thing that Lisa fully comprehended about the conversation, because it devolved into death, heaven, and angels and demons and... Okay, there was a part where Jess had been ripped out of heaven and back into her body. Then she'd been chained up with a bunch of other women that Dean's brother used to be in relationships with, or had fucked, or possibly had just been innocent baristas that Sam had smiled at. There were a lot of chicks, and Dean, Jess, and Bobby were pretty adamant that Sam hadn't slept with all of them. Lisa wasn't so sure about that, but Bobby said, "Sam wasn't Dean." And Lisa took him at his word because it seemed to be a trivial thing to fight about with all of the other craziness being discussed. So Jess had been imprisoned in a room where she and the other women were force-fed something called demon blood, and one by one her compatriots either died horrible deaths or went crazy, then died horrible deaths. The last girl, Madison, Jess thought her name was, had died earlier the day that Bobby and Dean had come to the rescue. The girl had not gone peacefully, and Jess had been pretty much resigned to having the same fate. Offering coffee and oatmeal cookies might not have been the appropriate thing to do at that juncture, but it was the only thing that Lisa could think of, and they all looked like they wanted the reprieve. She sent Ben to bed after letting him have his own cookie and let him take Dean's dog with him. Normally, she insisted that the dog sleep either on the living room floor or down in the basement, but Jessica's story had unnerved her enough that she felt the need to protect her child. Logically, she couldn't do that. Not against the things that Jess was talking about anyway. But it felt good to know that there was a protector in Ben's bedroom, even if it was just a canine. When Lisa came back out towards the living room, she overheard Jess talking about all of the questions that her captors had asked her and all of the barely heard conversations that they had tried to shield from her and her fellow prisoners. Jess said that she had never seen most of them, but there were more than the ones that Dean and Bobby had killed. Lisa stopped a foot shy of the entryway to the living room She felt vaguely guilty, eavesdropping in on a conversation in her own home, but there wasn't anything for it. Dean had been censoring himself around her, and his friend Bobby hadn't been any better. It was like some pact that they had made. She wasn't paranoid enough about it to actually believe that they had discussed keeping information from her, but that was the end result of what they were doing. It was like some odd form of chivalry that they had come up with. Instead of opening doors and pulling out chairs, they quieted their conversations and gave her strained, tight smiles when she walked in on them talking about otherworldly phenomena. They weren't censoring their talk with just Jessica in the room, and Lisa could honestly see why as she stood in the shadows of her home, listening to the things they were speaking about. Hell wasn't a place that she'd ever truly thought of in particularly graphic terms. It wasn't as if she'd never had a thought about it. What had happened to Ben pretty much ensured that she evaluated her stances on certain things, but something in her brain had kept her from completely realizing the very real nature of it. But protecting the innocents from the nature of evil apparently didn't extend to innocents who had been dragged out of heaven, especially when said innocent had been involved with the man who sent Lucifer back to hell. It wasn't something that Lisa wanted to know. In that moment, she wanted to take back every whispered prayer that she had made about Dean letting her in. She wanted to take back every prod she'd ever made at him to talk about Sam, because the knowledge that she was getting now was sending chills down her spine. Dean and Sam had literally saved the world, and it sounded like evil wanted its payback for that. Before the story got any worse, Lisa forced herself to pop back into the living room and interrupt the conversation. She didn't want to know anything more. She didn't want to hear about what the Winchester men had done for humanity, because it was just going to make her feel worse. She already knew what she was going to do, and even as she said her goodnights and crawled into her bed, she hated herself just a little bit. It wouldn't be long until whatever those bastards wanted would lead them to Dean's doorstep, and Lisa couldn't let that doorstep be hers. Her job as a mother was to protect Ben. If she didn't have him, if it was just her, it would be different. But that wasn't the case. She didn't sleep that night, but feigned it well enough when Dean slid into the bed next to her at some ungodly hour of the morning. She let him curl around her for warmth, and she cried silently as he drifted off to sleep. She held a hero in her arms, and she was going to kick him to the curb. It made her the worst sort of lover, but she had to choose between being a good mother over that. The bitch of it all was that she really had been starting to fall in love with Dean Winchester. When Lisa kicked him out the next morning, Dean felt like he should be sad. He felt like he should be angry. But the hell of it all was that all he felt was pride. He was proud of Lisa, and even maybe loved her a tiny bit for putting her son first. She was doing what John Winchester should have done. She was being the mother to Ben that Sam had deserved, and Dean had wanted, back ever since his own mother had died. It was then that he realized that he was either too selfless for his own good, or he maybe wasn't in love with her enough to feel betrayed. Sam would have been disappointed, but then again, Sam usually didn't have a hard time finding something to be disappointed with Dean about. Ben was devastated when he heard the news, and Bobby stayed in the kitchen to help counsel Lisa about dealing with stubborn fools of boys while Dean packed. "I'm sorry." Jess's soft whisper broke into Dean's train of thought as he methodically rolled his shirts into tight rolls that would pack better in his duffel bag. "For what?" Dean responded without looking over at her. Her skin color had been getting consistently more pallid, and she'd started to have occasional spikes in temperature. It was the demon blood fucking with her system, and Dean really didn't want to see the reactions that she was having because it was just a reminder that Sam had never had those reactions. Sam had had withdrawals and cravings, but all that demon blood had ever done to him was make him strong and reckless. It hadn't made him look like he was on death's door until he'd come pretty far down off the high that it gave him. That your girlfriend is leaving you, or I guess kicking you out, because of all this, Jess explained. Not your fault, Dean grunted as he chased after a runaway pair of balled-up socks. No, it isn't. But it's something that you say when you feel bad for another person and you can't help them, Jess told him softly. Dean glanced at her at that, and she shot him a tiny, gentle smile before continuing. Sam used to think that he could fix anything, you know? I used to have to tell him that it was okay. He couldn't fix the whole world's problems. Guess he showed me, huh? Jess. She cut him off with a wave of her hand. No, no, don't. You were right when you told me that I was out of your brother's league. I was nowhere near good enough of a girlfriend for the man that saved the world, and I'm not going to start accepting apologies from his brother because you'd have done the same thing had you been in his shoes. Dean frowned and shook his head. I don't know about that. I do. You know, when we first got together, when Sam first started spending nights with me, he'd have these nightmares sometimes. He'd always wake himself up from them, and he'd call out for you. He'd look around the room for a minute until he wasn't confused about where he was at anymore. I guess he was always looking for you. Dean just stared at her in response because he wasn't going there. He needed to keep it together, and discussing his damn feelings about not being able to save Sam, about not being around when Sam needed him, that wasn't going to help anything. Jess just smiled and shrugged and picked up a pair of Dean's socks to roll into a tight, economical ball, mimicking the ones he'd just been hunting. Sam used to put away his socks like that. It took me forever to convince him that they didn't need to be crammed together that way, she explained as she tossed the socks at Dean. He caught the ball reflexively, but just stared at it in his hand instead of tossing it into his duffel bag. He didn't understand what Jess was doing. Attempting to bond with him? Trying to make him feel better? He was pretty sure that she wasn't trying to flirt with him, but he didn't get the whole not mad at him because his brother got her killed thing. Dean, I... God, you're even more screwed in the head than Sam was, aren't you? It's called kindness, Jess stated firmly, or as firmly as she could, given that her forehead was already starting to look clammy, with what Dean assumed was a bout of withdrawal from the demon blood that she'd been fed, or maybe it was just another reaction from her body trying to reject it. Hell, maybe it was just the shock of being alive again, being tortured, and then having to watch other women go crazy and die right in front of her. In other circumstances, Dean would be mad at her for calling him or Sam messed up, even if it was true. He would still be mad at her with it being true, if not for the fact that, despite her suspiciously forgiving attitude, she had already died once because of his family, and she had been dragged out of heaven, and she was eventually going to have to die again because of Sam. At least, he had to assume that the whole thing revolved around Sam in some fashion. The basement full of dead girlfriends was a honking big neon sign pointing in that direction. Yeah, he finally grunted noncommittally when he realized that she was still looking at him, like she expected a response of some sort. She gave up on talking to him after that, but she didn't leave him alone. After the tearful goodbyes were said, Jess didn't pile into Bobby's truck, but slid herself right into the passenger's seat of the Impala, Sam's seat. If it were anybody else, Dean would have made her get out. He almost did make her get out, but she flashed him another tiny smile, and he found that he couldn't do it. This was the woman his Sam was going to marry. This was the woman that Sam had loved enough that it had driven him back into hunting. This was a woman whose life had been destroyed for the pure purpose of ensuring the Winchester destiny. She'd earned her right to sit in the passenger's seat. Gigantor, though, Dean was going to have a talk with his mutt about drooling on the back seats. They didn't talk much on the way to wherever they were going, but by the time Dean grunted something about getting close to their destination, Jessica was sure that she'd already heard more cock rock than she'd ever heard in her previous lifetime. Sam had failed to mention that his brother's taste in music was so specific. Then again, Sam had pretty much failed to mention several pertinent facts about his family and his life, so Jess really shouldn't be surprised by the music thing. She supposed that it was just something she could fixate on without feeling guilty. She had tried to ask where they were headed, but all that she'd gotten was that they were going to Bobby's place. Which, okay, she knew that Bobby was the older gentleman that had helped Dean rescue her, but there was a hell of a lot of information missing beyond that. She wondered if Dean thought that she could learn things through osmosis, or if he really was just that much of a jerk that he didn't care to enlighten her on anything. If she didn't feel so horrible, she might have tried to talk to Dean during their trip. She might have tried to turn down the music and ask some more questions, but her insides were oscillating between feeling like they were frozen and feeling like they were on fire. Jess was half afraid that if she were to split open her abdomen, her guts would look like the steak that the frat boys had tried to make Sam eat that one time. Charred to a crisp on the outside, but bloody and frozen solid in the middle. Truth be told, she was also kind of contemplating the fact that her abdomen might just split open by itself to give evidence to her charred frozen steak theory. Eventually, they pulled off the highways and started taking increasingly country roads until they pulled into what appeared to be a rundown scrapyard of some sort. Jess assumed that meant they were at Bobby's place, and she revised her opinion of Dean's silence. He obviously hadn't told her where they were headed because it would have sounded like they were dragging her off to some sociopath's fortress. Hell, for all Jess knew, they had. These people hunted monsters for a living, or a hobby, or lifestyle, or whatever. Point was that they had to be touched in the head in some way, didn't they? Of course, just as she thought that her life couldn't get any weirder, she heard Dean cuss loudly, and he fairly launched himself out of the car as soon as he put it in park. There was a man in a suit and tie standing on the dilapidated front porch, and Jess wondered if she should get out of the car to stop Dean from assaulting the poor census worker who was obviously in the wrong place at the wrong time. Thankfully, Bobby seemed to see the same thing and was running after Dean, grabbing a hold of his arm before he could take a swing. The three of them started yelling at each other, and Jess was forced to revise her opinion that Mr. Trenchcoat was a census worker. Gigantor groaned and whined in the back seat, so she timidly crept out of the car so that she could let the dog out. Before she could clip the leash on his collar, the dog bolted past her and ran off towards Dean. If she hadn't seen Sam move that fast back in her college days, she would have sworn that something so large wouldn't have the grace and inertia to go from practically immobile to flying missile in a matter of seconds. The dog had positioned himself between Dean and the trench coat man. His hackles were up, and he was growling low in his throat. Mr. Trenchcoat cocked his head and looked curiously at Gigantor, but he didn't look in the least bit afraid. His reaction pretty much cemented Jessica's belief that the guy wasn't a census worker. Then again, maybe he was just used to having all manner of things growling at him. She'd heard that the census guys had to go to the shiftiest of places, and Bobby's junkyard looked like it qualified. "What are you doing out of heaven?" was the first thing that the new guy said when Jess got up close to him. "You don't know. And here I thought God made you fancy head angel, dude." Dean's voice was filled with anger and sarcasm, and apparently census workers were angels. "You're an angel?" Jess asked. "He's a dick," Dean answered, and the new guy just stared back at him. "Jess, this is Castiel. He's a friend," Bobby said with a gentle tone. Jess was starting to like Bobby more. He seemed marginally sane, despite his scary doomsday junkyard and large collection of weaponry. "He's a douchebag," Dean corrected. "You are being unnecessarily adversarial," Castiel said towards Dean. Dean flipped him off. What's going on? Jess asked in her tiniest, quietest voice. The last thing she wanted to do was piss off any of the men standing in front of her. If Bobby and Dean were armed, then she'd bet money that this Castiel was too. There is an uprising in heaven. Some of the angels feel that I am too human and are doubting the position that I have been put in by God. They are seeking to get Michael out of the cage, he told her. And really, she understood all the words. She had to have. She got into goddamn Stanford. She wasn't stupid. That didn't keep her from not comprehending anything. What? Cass got a big-ass promotion and left us mere mortals to play boss man in heaven. Only now he's got a mutiny on his hands. Well, sorry, Cass, but we've got earthling matters to attend to. Dean snarled, and his dog gave an angry bark as if to punctuate the end of his sentence. My problem is your problem. I did not know that Jessica Moore had been pulled out of heaven until just now. That means that the information was hidden from me. It means that there are angels conspiring with demons to get into hell. Wait, you're saying that angels were helping demons revive Sam's dead girlfriends and feed them demon blood? That this was somehow supposed to get them into hell? Bobby asked before Dean could cut in again. They were feeding you demon blood. Jess nodded in response because, well, she remembers being forced to drink something, and it had tasted like blood mixed with the vilest of spices. Dean had told her it was demon blood, and she didn't have a reason to doubt him. This is not good, Castiel stated. You think so? Dean asked, all sarcasm and sneers. You are being very difficult, Dean. Bite me, Cass. Enough. I'm not going to let the two of you bicker in the presence of a lady, Bobby ordered. I apologize, Castiel said to her, although Jess didn't think he was actually sorry for anything. Dean didn't apologize, and somehow that made her feel better. She didn't need another lie, even if it was just a common courtesy. There were other girls there, too. I don't think all of them were... had been dead, Jess told Castiel after a few moments of awkward silence had passed. It makes sense. They would want to maximize their efforts. Maximize their efforts to do what, exactly? Dean asked. I don't know, but human bodies aren't made to survive in hell. They can't handle it and disintegrate. It's a safety valve. If they could survive being there, then there would be a constant line of kidnapped victims waiting for possession. Sam was an exception to this, as was Adam. Whoever is doing this must believe that one of Sam's intimate acquaintances must be immune as well. Sam slept with all those women? Jess squeaked, and yes, she understood that Sam wasn't exactly a virgin when they got together. She also figured that he hadn't been celibate after she died. But that many? She had denied it at Lisa's, but if an angel was saying otherwise... Not all of them, sweetheart. Sammy was big on the romance. Dean assured her and defended his brother, all in one sentence. The point is that this situation is very bad. Demons don't have the power to bring a human out of heaven. Even Crossroads demons can't do it by themselves. That's why the human needs to barter their soul. They need the power of a still human soul to pull off their magic. I highly doubt that those demons you killed found people to barter their souls away to wish Jessica Moore and her fellow women back into existence, Castiel said. So your angel buddies are working with demons. Great. How's the new job coming, Cass? The side job of stealing candy from babies not lucrative enough these days? You are being difficult. I will contact you when I have more information. Castiel disappeared in a gust of wind as soon as the last words got past his lips. Gigantor finally quit growling, though. Bobby heaved a sigh and gestured towards the front door. Well, now that Dean's made a complete idiot of himself, would you like to go inside and have something to drink? Dean was pissed at Cass. He was pissed at Sam, too, but he missed his brother like a missing limb, and the likelihood that he was ever going to have the chance to express his ire towards his brother ever again was approximately nil. Come to think of it, he missed Sam worse because he'd had missing limbs in hell, and he never missed them like he'd missed Sam. A few hours of research had provided no more information than what they had already had, but Dean wasn't surprised. Angels were involved. When did they ever get information out of them? Bobby had slipped a sedative into Jessica's drink when they'd gotten into the house. He didn't put her down in the safe room, even though her sweating and shaking episodes had started to get worse. He said that she didn't deserve to wake up in another prison basement, even if it was a good precaution. Thinking about Jess's condition, Dean winced. Maybe he should have talked to Cass about cleaning her up before he left. If he hadn't been so angry at the appearance of his one-time friend, he would have thought clearly enough to bring it up. He hadn't, though, and she was upstairs suffering because of it. He just hoped that she didn't die. He didn't want death on his shoulders a second time. Out of desperation, he hit the speed dial on his phone to call Chuck. Maybe the guy had seen something and just forgotten Dean's number after the apocalypse or something. Hello? Chuck's voice sounded slurred from sleep and not drunkenness. It wasn't an encouraging sign for possible Sam and Hell visions. Hey, Chuck.
Dean? Hey, how are you doing?
Chuck whispered, and Dean could hear him fumbling around with something.
Oh, the usual. That good, huh?
Chuck commented, and Dean heard a door click shut.
Chuck, what are you up to?
Becky was sleeping. Didn't want to wake her.
Becky, didn't you break up with her?
What? No.
Dude, you totally did, right before the whole apocalypse showdown thing. I remember it was right before I got to see both of my brothers fall into the bottomless pits of hell to take up residence as angel condoms for eternity.
Okay, first of all, that was very flowery for you. Second of all, do you mean that the freaking apocalypse is over and none of you douchebags told me?
Dude, what the hell? You sent me to the graveyard.
What graveyard?
Have you been smoking something? Did Becky put some sort of mind spell on you? Because I gotta tell you, she's a little creepy. I wouldn't put her past something like that.
Oh my god. Oh my god. I need a drink. No, I need to sit down. No, I need to drink and sit down and possibly throw up.
Chuck rambled on the other end of the line. Chuck?
I can't believe that the apocalypse is over. I mean, I thought we were all doomed, you know? Or, at least, I thought that I was going to end up a toilet paper hoarding gnome while Castiel started bawling everything that moved.
God, I didn't even make her sign a prenup.
What, who, Becky?
Yeah, well, I figured she was going to kick it, right?
Wait, you married that psycho chick?
Hey, that's my wife you're talking about, Chuck protested.
A wife that you're having panic attacks about marrying, Dean pointed out.
Yeah, well, wait until you get married. It'll happen to you too.
I'm pretty sure I'm not going to marry a chick who was in love with one of my supposedly fictional characters.
Whatever, man. I need to go call my lawyer and possibly buy more Jack Daniels. I'll call you if I, see anything.
Chuck hung up the phone before Dean could say anything else. Dean stared at the blank display on his cell phone for a while before coming to the conclusion that Chuck might have the right idea. A drink sounded pretty damn good at the moment.
When he shuffled out into Bobby's kitchen, the first thing that he noticed was a pissed-off Crowley stuck in a devil's trap made out of mustard.
I'm pretty sure I don't want to know, he said as he walked towards the refrigerator.
What did Chuck have to say? Bobby asked without looking in Dean's direction, his gaze focused on Crowley. Dean reached inside the fridge to grab a beer before answering.
Not much.
He wasn't sure what Crowley did or did not know, but he wasn't about to talk about Chuck not remembering his vision about the graveyard in front of him. Or worse, not being the person that Dean had talked to all those months ago.
So, Dean began after a few minutes of silence, is there a reason that you've got a demon locked up in your kitchen? Or is this some sort of kinky game you two are playing?
Crowley scowled in his direction.
Bobby summoned me. I stepped into the kitchen and he squirted the last of the trap in around me. It's terribly rude.
You summoned him right into a trap?
Dean didn't bother hiding his surprise at the information. He wasn't sure what bothered him more, the fact that Bobby was summoning demons, or the fact that he had gotten good enough at it that he could control their placement when summoned.
Some of us have been developing some new skills that don't involve campfires and weenie roasts, Bobby snapped. Yeah, but demon summoning, that's kind of... Boy, I don't think you of all people should be giving me any lectures about doing stupid, dangerous things,
Bobby interrupted. Point, Dean acceded with a nod of his head.
So what did you summon him for?
Yes, Bobby, what did you summon me for? Crowley asked with his perpetual edge of sarcasm.
Well, I figured that you being a demon at all, you might be holding back some information about this whole situation. I'm finding it kind of hard to believe that you don't know about the angels interfering. Instead of me and Dean running around the globe trying to figure out what you already know, I figured I'd go straight to the source.
With mustard? Crowley asked, his expression a mixture of distaste and boredom. Dean looked at Bobby for the response because, if he was honest with himself, he was kind of curious about that.
The bottle has been in my fridge for over 2 years now. Stuff never goes bad, never gets used, and doesn't stain like ketchup does.
I think I've just been insulted by condiment choice. It's a first, and I've been around a very long time,
Crowley muttered.
Must be true love,
Dean goaded before taking another swig of his beer. Bobby just grunted and stared pointedly in Crowley's direction.
What, you think that I'm just going to spill all of my secrets to you because I'm stuck in a trap of sandwich spread?
Bobby grabbed a shotgun off the kitchen table and aimed it at the trapped demon. Crowley mock gasped, bringing his hand up to rest limply at his collar.
No gag? No safe word?
Don't make me shoot you. It takes time to pack salt rounds, and I don't feel like wasting them on you.
Don't make threats you don't intend.
Crowley cut off with a grunt of pain as Bobby casually shot him.
Didn't say I wouldn't, Bobby said with a casual shrug. You're getting mean in your old age.
Luckily for you, I like that in my men.
Bobby just primed his gun again, ejecting the spent casing and letting the next one settle into the chamber.
Oh, come on now. If I'm withholding information from you, do you really think that a couple of gunshots are going to get me to spill my secrets?
He's got a point there, Bobby. So what do you suggest? I kiss it out of him?
Bobby asked, with just a tiny glance sideways at Dean.
No. I don't think my eyes could handle that.
Much as I'd like to say otherwise, it wouldn't work. I'm more the kind to kiss and deal,
Crowley said, his usual swagger fully recovered from the shot.
That was a really bad pun. Just want you to know,
Dean informed the demon.
So sorry to have offended your sophisticated sense of humor.
Quit your snide remarks and start talking, Bobby snapped. I'm starting to think that tall, gorgeous, and beefcake over there is starting to negatively impact your brain. What part about, I'm not going to tell you anything, don't you get?
Bobby's frown furrowed deeper in his face as his eyes squinted with menace.
Listen, you.
Enough. Just enough, Crowley. Fighting with them isn't going to help anything, and Mr. Singer is correct.
They have better things to do than run around the country trying to figure out a riddle that we already have the answer to. A deep voice rumbled from the kitchen doorway. Bobby instantly turned and aimed his shotgun at the intruder, while Dean's hand went to grab the knife from the back of his belt. The figure stepped forward into the fluorescent lighting, but Dean didn't need to look to tell him that the light was revealing his little brother's face. Time hadn't erased the memory of what Sam's voice sounded like.
"Lucifer,"
Bobby hissed, and Dean swallowed hard around the bile that was desperately trying to make its way up his throat. "No, but before you ask, I'm not Sam either. I'm just inhabiting his body, if you will." That, there, was enough to make Dean go apeshit crazy with repressed grief and rage. He flung himself across the room to stab the thing that was walking around in his brother's skin. He dimly heard the twin protests from Crowley and Bobby. He understood Bobby's concern. Attacking an unknown target so recklessly was a seriously dumb maneuver. He wasn't sure why Crowley cared except for the fact that he was obviously in cahoots with whatever demon was occupying Sam, and he didn't want Dean to kill his compatriot. The thing in Sam grunted at the impact of Dean's body. Empty bottles and cans and dusty old books went flying in every direction as they grappled against each other, slamming into cupboards and counters. Dean managed to slice the demon's arm with his knife, but there was no accompanying flash from the cut. He barely jerked back in surprise, but it was enough for the creature to throw Dean to the side and roll into a defensive crouch with his back to the kitchen sink.
"You're not a demon,"
Dean noted out loud. The thing wearing Sam's skin huffed out in what used to be Sam's laugh for ironically moronic things that Dean said. "Yeah, well, the kid had a tattoo that kind of keeps that from happening. The ink is still intact."
"So we're back to you being Satan, or possibly a skinwalker, or a zombie, or a..."
"Do you really need to list all of the things I might be? You're in a room with one of the most knowledgeable hunters still alive, and a very old crossroads demon. I think that we're all up to speed." Dean glared back at him, but didn't say anything. His brain was racing, trying to remember where the nearest silver knife was and where he'd stashed his vial of holy oil.
"Look," the Sam clone said in a measured tone, "I'll let you stab me with silver, surround me with holy fire, drink holy water, whatever. Just, could we not waste our time having fist fights over this whole thing? You've got your existence to go back to, and so do I."
Dean squinted at him.
"Right," he drawled the word out to clearly express his doubt.
"I'm admitting that I'm not Sam, right? I could have just walked in here and faked it. His brain still has accessible memories in it."
"If you're not a demon and you're not the devil, what exactly are you claiming to be?"
Bobby asked with an eerie calm that Dean knew meant that Bobby was seconds away from shooting the creature with his gun to test out its resistance to rock salt. The Sam thing shrugged its shoulders, and it hurt to even watch because it was Sam's shrug. Sam's tiny lip purse that he always did when he was trying to come up with just the right wording in a tricky situation.
"I don't know. The cage was built to hold Lucifer in, but when it opened, it was Sam that was in control of the body. The cage wasn't built for human occupancy. As best I can tell from what I've gotten out of the demons down there, it tried expelling Sam from the cage, but Lucifer was still riding his meat suit. I guess that it was like making a Thanksgiving Day wish, only they both got expelled, and somehow I was created out of it."
"Wait, wait. You're telling me that my brother's soul is stuck in hell, and you're some sort of love child between him and the devil, and you expect me to not kill you?" Dean snarled as sickness and rage warred for dominance in his belly. The creature sighed and shook his head.
"I don't know where Sam's soul is. I've looked, but the thing is, his soul wasn't headed for hell, but there aren't exactly reapers down there to take him upwards either."
"There are no reapers in hell," Dean stated blandly, as his eyebrows rose in statement of disbelief.
He's right, actually. There are no bodies in hell to reap souls from. And believe me, when they have to bring one down, they get out of there as fast as they can afterwards. Bunch of pansies, really.
Crowley butted into the conversation, as if they were discussing actual pansies of the floral kind, and it made Dean want to hit him. Then again, Dean wanted to hit a lot of things at the moment, so it could just be his general mood.
And I have so much more reason to trust you than I do him. In case you forgot, you're in league with this guy, and you've been leading us on a merry little information-withholding chase.
Dean addressed Crowley with a sneer.
I'm a demon. It's what I do, Crowley announced proudly, and a little too smugly for Dean's taste.
Crowley? The Sam thing reprimanded, and Dean was surprised to see the demon flinch just a little bit. Dean's eyes flickered over towards Bobby, and the expression on the other man's face told him that he wasn't the only one that had noticed Crowley's unusual reaction.
What exactly is going on here? Bobby asked.
Whether you believe me or not, I am here on a mission of good. I had hoped to not involve you, or at least minimize your involvement in all of this. I knew that my appearance would be difficult for both of you, and I had no desire to inflict further harm. Sam cared deeply for both of you, and those memories of feelings still linger in his body.
Dean started contemplating shoving his half-empty beer bottle through the thing's eye socket. If it didn't look so much like Sam, he was certain that he would have already attempted it.
A mission of good?
What mission of good involves demons and yanking poor girls' souls out of heaven? He asked in lieu of violence. The thing didn't answer for a moment, but then turned to look at Crowley with an almost pleading look. Crowley looked put upon for a moment, but when the thing's eyes narrowed at him, he slapped on a fake smile and cleared his throat.
They call him Hades. The Lord of the Underworld. This is supposed to reassure me that he isn't the devil, Dean asked.
Hades kept souls from leaving the underworld and coming back to life, Bobby responded without looking in Dean's direction.
Crowley beamed. I knew I liked you for a reason. Bobby grunted in response.
Wait, wait. You're trying to say that Sam thing over there is just some benevolent god trying to keep dead people from leaving hell? I've been there. That doesn't sound so great of a thing to do.
Not people, Dean. Demons. The creature, Hades, clarified.
Don't you call me that. Not with my brother's voice. Dean snarled. You don't know me, and I sure as fuck don't want to get to know you.
Okay, Mr. Winchester, then. Hades seemed amused, and Dean was very close to wiping the growing smirk off the thing's face. Can we leave the male posturing until later, or do you not want to know the rest of the story? Crowley interrupted the brewing fight.
Go on, Dean spat out grudgingly.
In any case, Hades is riding around in Lucifer's vessel, a vessel that is outside of the cage. Lucifer's devoted followers want to control his body and give it back over. If that wasn't enough, the not-so-devoted definitely don't want Satan getting out, but they certainly want to be able to keep the Overlord over there from raining on their parade.
And what do the angels have to do with all this? Bobby asked.
If Lucifer's vessel can get out of the cage, so can Michael's. Both sides figure that the vessel could theoretically call each angel through the cage and back into the vessel, but Hades is actually the only person that knows where the cage is at.
That sounds like a really good reason for killing him to me, Dean pointed out.
Yes, because that body has certainly never been dead before. Did you somehow miss the whole angelic interference part? In Dean's opinion, Crowley's sarcasm was riding pretty high for a demon captured in a hot dog condiment.
Okay, fine. They want Body Snatcher over there for his magical cage-finding brain. What does that have to do with Sam's ex-girlfriends? And, by the way, isn't Hades supposed to be a god?
The god part is complicated, but the women are rather simple, Crowley explained, or rather didn't. And, Dean prompted, tired of the theatrics. Hades opened his mouth before Crowley had the chance. They are looking for Persephone.
Come again.
Dean was fairly certain that his face shouldn't look as shocked as it did in the reflection of Bobby's microwave. He wasn't actually that shocked by the announcement. The explanation did make some sort of twisted sense. It was just that his face obviously didn't see it that way.
They are looking for my mate. I cannot... Persephone would...
It's just advisable to keep them away from their goal. I can handle the demons, but the angels are a different subject.
And you think that Bobby and I can handle a bunch of rogue angels?
No, I don't. I had hoped to keep the both of you out of this mess.
Well, good job on that.
I waited as long as I could. For months I avoided getting either of you involved in this. Months, Dean and I.
Hades paused and took a deep breath.
I refuse to allow you to goad me. The situation is what it is.
That it is, but don't be looking for our support, and don't call me Dean, he said as he turned and started walking out of the kitchen.
Where are you going? Hades asked with a whiny tone that Dean was fairly certain Sam hadn't used since he'd turned 16.
I'm going to go get my holy oil out of the trunk of my car. You'd better be here and ready to walk through a burning ring of fire when I get back.
How very Johnny Cash of you, Crowley muttered.
Dean flipped him off without even turning around to look back.
Much to Dean's disappointment, Hades could cross the holy fire without any problem other than his cheap jeans starting to smolder from the heat of the fire. He licked salt from his hand and chased it down with holy water, then had the nerve to ask for a lime. He did the hokey-pokey in and out of the trap, holding Crowley, much to everybody's embarrassment. The worst part of the whole ordeal was that Dean's damn traitor of a dog loved the Sam suit-stealing thing. Gigantor had run into Bobby's house when Dean had come back from the Impala with supplies, and Hades had had the dog over on his back in seconds. Bobby informed him that his dog was worthless, and Dean was grudgingly starting to agree with that assessment. The only saving grace about the situation was that the dog still growled at Crowley. Bobby grudgingly let Crowley out of the devil's trap, and the demon left as quickly as possible with only an admonishment that Bobby needed to buy him repentance roses to make up for trussing him up without the hope of getting off. Dean wanted to gag a little bit after that. Hades looked like he was stuck between being horrified and amused. When it became clear that Hades wasn't just going to poof away in the same manner that Crowley had, Dean locked him in Bobby's panic room for the night, while the older hunter went to go check on Jessica. Hades went in without the slightest hint of resistance or reluctance. His actions were far from reassuring. In Dean's experience, the only reason for a supernatural creature to act that way was that the creature's powers were stronger than the protection of the room. It was unnerving. Dean slammed the door shut the instant that Hades stepped through the archway and into the room. He didn't want to look at that thing one moment longer than he had to. Once he got back up the stairs, he made a brief eye contact with Bobby before grunting his goodnight. Dean could see his own worries and concerns reflecting in Bobby's eyes with a few extras added on. The extras were no doubt focused around Dean and Dean's ability to cope with the situation. Dean fell asleep within 2 minutes of crawling into Bobby's spare cot. His last thought was that he was amazed that his body was relaxing into sleep so readily. His first thought upon waking was that his body was out to get him, because sleep should last more than 40 minutes. He tried to roll over. He tried to think of nothing. He tried to think about his father's lectures on the merits of proper hygiene in laundry. None of it worked. Apparently, whatever magic that had convinced his body that sleep was okay wasn't working on his addled brain. Of course, he knew the reason for that was sitting down in Bobby's panic room.
He also knew that he shouldn't go down there alone, but the non-sane part of him reasoned that if he couldn't sleep, then there was no reason that the thing pretending to sort of not be Sam should have the privilege of sleeping either. His worthless dog followed him down the stairs, but when Dean told him to sit at the bottom of the staircase, Gigantor obeyed. Granted, the mammoth dog obeyed with a huff of dog breath and a put-upon doggy sigh, but he obeyed. Hades was still awake when Dean slammed the door wide open. If Dean was in a truthful mood, he would admit to being disappointed at that. He wanted to rudely awaken the thing. It seemed only fair after the creature had stripped away Dean's last dream of Sam coming back from hell. Even if his brother's soul and spirit did manage to find its way out, it was going to go straight up to heaven. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Mr. Winchester, Hades greeted with Sam's bashful little smile. Dean wanted to rip the look off of the guy's face, but settled for a verbal tongue-lashing instead. Look, you whatever you are. You're in Sammy's body, and I don't like that. I think that we know that I'd rather be putting a bullet in your brain right now, but I'm not sure that it would actually kill you, and I'm not going to start shooting people until I get an idea of what is going on. Hades just nodded in response. He must have gotten the message that Dean really didn't want to hear something not Sam using Sam's voice. Either that, or he was one of those annoying people things who actually did think before speaking. I think that we need to set some ground rules. First, if I find out that you're keeping Sam from taking back possession of his body, there will not be words for the torture that I will put you through. Second, there will be no kidnapping of women, virgin maidens, or otherwise, to drag back down to your caveman hell lair. Hades smiled at that. I had no idea you were actually versed in the mythology. I spent a lot of time reading after my two brothers got angel taxied into hell. Mythology seemed like a good place to start, what with meeting Mercury and your fellow gods. I don't think that my situation is quite the same. I don't think that I'm actually a god. As for your other concern, if I was planning on abducting Persephone, I would have done it already. Dean frowned at Hades' words. Wait, you mean that you know who she is? I do, Hades confirmed with a slight bob of his head. And you don't think this information might be important to us? You're the one looking for our help. I am. I also know how well you do at protecting one specific target. Your reputation for keeping them breathing is less than stellar. Dean wanted to hit him for that comment, but he didn't because the guy wasn't exactly wrong. Right. So you want our help, but you're not going to tell us who she is. Pretty much, yeah. Hades emphasized his agreement with a nod. Fine. Just remember, no abductions and no raping while wearing my brother's face. Or, you know, at all. And I'm so going to hunt you down when this is all over. You realize that, right? Hades arched an eyebrow at him. You do realize that giving me fair warning isn't exactly a wise thing to do, don't you? It's not fair warning. It's a threat and a promise. Dean snapped before stalking back out of the panic room and slamming the door shut behind him. He returned to his bed, but he didn't sleep. Jess wasn't sure if she should be happy that she was awake and lucid, mad that she had apparently been drugged, or just plain depressed because she was clearly living the afterlife of a career criminal, and she'd never done anything to deserve it. Okay, yeah, she'd apparently had sex with Lucifer's intended. Well, lots and lots of sex. But she didn't know that Sam had been destined to start the apocalypse, now did she? And it wasn't like Sam had meant to do that, or even knew about it, so she couldn't see how she could be held accountable for something her boyfriend hadn't even known about. I want you to know that I hate you, she mumbled as she stumbled into Bobby Singer's kitchen.
Bobby gave her a tiny, apologetic, and entirely too gentlemanly smile for a man with a beard and a collection of ratty baseball caps. Dean just grunted at her. "So, you drugged me up last night." Jess tried when it became apparent that neither of them were going to say anything.
"It was the best choice. Demon blood, it isn't something that you want to mess around with. It ain't your run-of-the-mill drug,"
Bobby said gently. Dean grunted again. "Great, so am I going to start craving this stuff forever? Like some sort of vampire junkie?"
"God, I hope not. Vampires are nasty."
Dean's mouth finally formed words. Jess found that she kind of wanted to slap him, but that was probably just the generally crappy way she was feeling. She'd never been addicted to anything before.
"So,"
Bobby said as he put a plate of dry toast down in front of her. She twitched an inquiring eyebrow up at him because she had no idea what exactly it was that he thought she should be saying, but his gaze was resting on Dean's face.
"What?"
Dean snapped at the older man.
"You know what?"
Bobby responded, and Jess was pretty sure that Bobby's tone implied that not only was Dean an idiot, he was also a moronic and spineless idiot.
"You're going to make me tell her?"
"Tell me what?" Jess interrupted before the two of them could get into a pissing match over whatever information it was that they thought she would need to know.
"Look, Jess, there are a lot of things out there that..."
"Some weird-ass thing has possessed Sam's body, and it's locked up in Bobby's basement," Dean interrupted Bobby's obviously gentle speech.
"Oh," Jess heard herself say.
Bobby smacked Dean's knuckles with the wooden spoon he'd just dragged out of one of his kitchen drawers.
"Actually, I'm not exactly locked up so much as roaming around the house freely, but the sentiment is nice."
Jess felt her eyes widen because the throaty rumble and the slightly hunched posture she was seeing was all Sam. Most of her brain insisted that it was Sam, but her brain had been insisting that she do some pretty strange shit just the night before, so she knew that it wasn't that great of an idea to treat it like it was sane.
"What the?"
Dean sputtered as he stood up from his chair.
"You didn't lock the door last night, and I think that I already proved that I'm not a demon."
"Sam?"
Jess heard her voice crack on the word, but she was going to steadfastly ignore that little fact. He smiled sadly at her and shook his head.
"Hades, actually. They call me Hades."
"Oh, well, I guess if Sam was going to get taken for a joyride, you're a better choice than Lucifer, right? I mean, in mythology, you weren't exactly a complete bad guy,"
Jess mumbled nervously. She was pretty certain that the look on Dean's face was actually meant to flay the flesh from her bones. For a moment, it really scared her because for all she knew of this strange new world she was living in, looks really could kill.
"Thank you,"
Hades offered with Sam's shy smile.
"You don't thank her. You don't say anything to her,"
Dean snarled before he stormed out of the room. Jess frowned because leaving a confrontation didn't seem like something Dean would do. Not that she had deep knowledge of him, but what little she knew pointed to it being out of character for him.
He left because he was going to shoot me otherwise, and he wouldn't be able to handle the guilt of shooting his own brother,"
Hades filled in for her.
"How do you know that?"
"Because Sam's brain can still recognize your facial expressions and all of Dean's tells."
"That's... okay, this is just way beyond what I was raised to deal with,"
Jess admitted as she leaned against the counter for support.
"Dean, I require your..."
The suit guy from the other day popped into existence in the kitchen, and Jess just wanted to get off the merry-go-round already.
"Castiel,"
Hades greeted with a slight nod of his head.
"Sam?"
Jess just stared at the suit guy and wondered if he'd been dropped on his head as a baby. Maybe he had. Maybe that was what baby dropping did to you. Turned you into a freak that could teleport and do other stuff. She was pretty sure that wasn't the case, but then again, what the hell did she really know except that anybody that had known Sam should be at least shocked to see him alive?
I am not Sam, Hades replied with all the smooth tones that Jess had watched Sam practice in front of their tiny bathroom mirror whenever he was working on verbal presentations. Castiel's brow furrowed.
I need to speak with Dean, he said, almost as if he were a robot of some sort instead of a living being.
Head dropping, definitely. Or maybe one of those high fevers that cook brain cells? Maybe Castiel was a victim of that demon blood stuff that she'd been on.
No, wait. Hadn't Dean said something about this guy having angel buddies, or he was an angel?
Maybe he'd been exposed to some angel dust or something. If demon blood had done the number it had on her system, maybe angel stuff messed with your brain waves?
He's outside with his dog, Hades replied, though his lips were twisting in a smirk that let Jessica know that Sam's memories of her face were letting him know what she was thinking. Or something like that.
She watched Castiel leave. Once she heard the outside door slam, she turned to Bobby.
What's wrong with him?
Bobby opened his mouth, shrugged, and scratched the top of his head.
Which one?
I... never mind, Jess mumbled as she sank down onto the chair that Dean had vacated. Turning to face the being that used to be her devoted boyfriend, she gestured for him to sit as well.
So, you're the Lord of the Underworld. Tell me more.